support a single-payer health care plan for the U.S.? Should there be a Medicare for All system in place? I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We will talk with our guest political scientist this hour about the battle to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act and a suggestion from U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren last week that Democrats should campaign on a single-payer health plan. We will welcome your questions about single-payer or your thoughts on what sort of health plan the U.S. should have at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest, Ed Miller, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, co-director of the Center for the Small City. His areas of expertise include the legislative process, American politics, public policy, and health policy. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Happy 4th of July to you.
Happy 4th to you.
As Senate Republicans grapple with their own version of a health care bill, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren said that that Democrats should campaign on in 2018 and 2020 a national single-payer health care plan. First off, what's your reaction to that? Do you think that she's making some sense or not?
Well, the single-payer plan has always been a position that a number of people have taken for many years. It makes a lot of sense. It's cheaper. It has a substantially lower administrative cost. The problem with it, the fundamental problem, is politically, the trying to get it approved, and people simply don't approve that because they're used to the current system. Yeah. Anything that makes major changes, and this wouldn't make any changes really in the health care system. People always get confused. So they say, "Well, you're affecting large portion of the economy and the like." But really, you're talking about the health insurance market, not the health market.
Yeah. So, can you define a single payer health care system?
Well, a single payer plan would simply be a system in which, in effect, the money collected as well as the payouts would be by the government. It could be by the federal government. It actually could be designated by the states. So, for example, in Canada, there is a single-payer plan, but the plans are a bit different in the different provinces in Canada. So there's a national system. But in fact is there are variations in their various provinces, and there's some differences in terms of some differences in benefits and the like in Canada. It would not affect, and people always say that Canada has socialized medicine. They do not. The doctors, hospitals, and so forth are all private in Canada, no different than the United States, basically. But it's the insurance system that is socialized because it's run by the government.
So there are no private insurance companies under a single payer plan.
Right. Well, there could be for private insurance companies for supplements. In other words, you may get a supplemental policy to what the insurance would cover. So you could have that, and we do with Medicare, for example. Many people have, or most people mm-hmm. probably have, some kind of Medigap policy in addition to their Medicare policy. So you would still have, that. The one thing that would be a debate is, and that is whether you could have a policy that could cover the same things. And so that would be a problem because, for example, in Britain, the fact is that they do have so-called private medicine that goes along with their doctors that are paid on the national health care system. It's a little bit different in Britain because it's not exactly a single-payer plan in terms of the physicians, because the specialists, for example, typically work for the national health care system, at least for most of their job, and then they may also have a private practice. But in Britain, for example, if you want to go to a specialist, you typically go to the National Health Care Service, But you could also go to a private physician, and that physician is usually somebody who's also practices in the National Health Care Service, but you may get a quick appointment. If you got to go into the hospital, you may be admitted more quickly and the like. When Canada decided to adopt a system, Canada decided they didn't want that. And so Canada makes it illegal to sell insurance and for people to have insurance on anything that the Canadian healthcare system covers. People can have insurance for other things. There are things that are not covered by the Canadian healthcare system. Or if you go, or if you're in another country, if you go to the United States, for example, the insurance would cover that. But let me just point out, it doesn't mean, and a lot of people think it means, that the government is going to administer the system. Social Security, for example, is administered by the federal government. And so you get your Social Security check from the federal government. If you have any questions, there are Social Security offices that you can go to, and there are federal employees. In contrast, Medicare is not. Medicare is a federal system, but it's administered by agents and their insurance companies. So Medicare, you're not getting a check from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. You're not getting a check from them, or the providers would not be getting a check from them for services. It essentially comes through the insurance companies. And so for a national system like this, I would seriously doubt they're going to set up a bureaucracy that would administer the system. I mean, I guess they could, but my guess is that they're going to use the same insurance companies that now administer regular current health insurance.
According to a Pew Research Center national survey, 33% of the public now favors a single-payer approach to health insurance. That's up 5 percentage points since January and up 12 points since 2014. Any idea why we might be seeing an increase in support for this type of coverage?
Well, I think the basic problems that people are having with insurance companies, whether it's through the Affordable Care Act or whether it's just their group policy, people who go to doctors are finding lots of problems. Physicians are finding tremendous problems in getting their patients covered, and they have to appeal decisions and things like that. And I think people are simply frustrated with the current system that we have. On the other hand, it's very difficult to make this major change politically to adopt the system. We had the Medicare system, you know, was proposed, you know, way back. I mean, certainly Teddy Roosevelt had some proposal in that area. It was supposed to be part of Social Security originally, even Franklin Roosevelt. And, of course, we didn't get even Medicare and then, you know, Medicaid until 1965. So that is a really long history before we actually adopted. So you can just see the pushback against that kind of system.
Yeah. I guess I'm actually surprised that only 33% of the public favors a single-payer approach. So why would the majority of the country be against this?
Well, it's hard to tell what people think. But I think, you know, any change is going to be a major thing. The other thing is I don't think people understand it. They really don't understand what that would be. And they're thinking of government taking over all medicine. They also, and I have found this to be generally true, that Americans have a misunderstanding of Canada. They don't know. They say, well, we don't want the Canadian system with their long waits and things like that. And they don't realize that the Canadians really like their system. Of course, they complain about it, and there are problems, and there are some waits for elective procedures. But those are mainly, like the waits for elective procedures, for example, has nothing to do with the way they pay their doctors, you know, in terms of the Canadian healthcare system. It's how much money that they've put into various equipment, for example, MRIs and things like that. And so we're not going to do that in this country because, you know, we've got more, MRIs in Michigan, for example, than they have all of Canada. And we're not going to ratchet it down like that, as they have in Canada. But people don't understand that the Canadian system itself is very, very good. You go into the doctor, and you have a card with a maple leaf on it, and it it's like a credit card, and you give the clerk the card, and they just, you know, swipe it through, and that's it. And they don't have what we have in the United States. We have, if you look at any hospital, they have lots of people doing billing and all this stuff, and they have far fewer people in Canada. I mean, if you go into a physician office, you know, an office maybe with three or four physicians, for example, there may be one person who does it, maybe two at the most, unlike the United States, in which we have lots of resources that are tied up in this administrative process. So it's a much cleaner process. It's an easier process. The people look at Canada and they say, oh, there's this way. We don't want to have that in the United States.
I'm going to jump in because we have news next from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about the possibility of a single-payer health system in the U.S. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Senator Elizabeth Warren is calling on Democrats to campaign on national single payer in 2018 and 2020. Last week, she said President Obama tried to move us forward on health care coverage. He was using a conservative model that came from one of the conservative think tanks. She goes on to say that now it is time for the next step. The next step is single payer. So what do you think? Do you agree or not? Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Ed Miller, who's a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. I wonder, Professor Miller, if can you respond to President Obama trying to move us forward in this direction with the Affordable Care Act?
Well, the Affordable Care Act was an improvement over, you know, the system we had because, you know, individuals couldn't be covered. And this is essentially on the individual market in particular that people had trouble getting insurance. So if you had any pre-existing condition and sometimes pre-existing conditions were defined as, you know, things that lots of people have, like high blood pressure and things like that, you couldn't get insurance at all. They would not give you insurance, or you would have to pay extremely high prices. And so this was attempting to particularly look at that element of the market. However, the Affordable Care Act has also improved people in the group insurance market. So in the group insurance market, where you get it from your employer, for example, people say, oh, it doesn't affect me. You know, I'm not on Medicaid. I don't have an individual policy. I don't care. But in fact, it has affected them because all, for example, no matter what their deductible or copayment is, all the preventative items, so colonoscopy, for example, vaccinations, are all provided at no cost, no copayment, and no deductible. And the reason for that is the Affordable Care Act also limits. And in terms of, you know, a lot of policies had like $1 million limit. So if you hit $1 million, they wouldn't pay anymore. So under the Affordable Care Act, this is must be covered. I mean, there's no limits. So those limits are gone. So if the Affordable Care Act is repealed and something else may be replaced for it, it's possible that these items will come back and will affect those people in the group market, not only in the individual market.
Yeah, but the public option in the Affordable Care Act had to be discarded because there wasn't enough support for that. That would have been a step toward a single payer. The public option is the
right.
Single payer part.
Well, exactly right, and that was one of the reasons that there was some opposition to it. The Democrats at the time. A number of Democrats said that they would not vote for the Affordable Care Act if there was not a public option, and they were pressing for the public option. Well, there are other people who said that they wouldn't vote for it, and particularly Republicans, who ultimately didn't vote for it, but they wouldn't vote for it if there was a public option. And so the original bill did, as you mentioned, have a public option. And exactly what you said is some people feared who opposed it. They feared that the public option would be superior, to that of all the insurance policies, and people, and therefore it would be a single payer plan in a way, at least not in the group market, but in the individual market. It wasn't the intention, but it would ultimately wind up that way, and that's what people feared. What they did was, as a compromise to these Democrats, they established this idea that every market was supposed to have a co-op, and that was the idea instead of the public option. And we do have some co-ops. There's a very good one in Madison, for example, but they have not really done well. There's some that have. One of the problems of the co-ops was they simply didn't have the money. They didn't have the capital to be able to sustain the insurance. But that was the substituting for the public mm-hmm. option. What nobody remembers is that when the drug benefit was put in, this is in the Bush administration, and for Medicare, there was a public option as a possibility there because they didn't know how many insurance companies would be competing for the drug plans, whether it's a standalone plan or part of your Medicare plan, your Medicare supplemental plan. So people didn't know. And so they had, if there wasn't competition, then the public option would then come into play. Well, as it turned out is that in the markets there were lots and lots, maybe too many, insurance companies competing for that drug benefit in that market. But that was a safety valve. That safety valve doesn't exist in the Affordable Care Act because of this opposition. If it did, then we wouldn't have the problems in a number of places where insurance companies have pulled out and there's not an insurance competitor in the market. Mm-hmm. And some of this pull out is because they're afraid what the president is going to do with some additional money to support them.
Let's take calls as we have full lines. Jim in River Falls is with us first. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for having this program. Good morning. I think U.S., you can get great health coverage if you have the money and, your employer has it available to you. But, there's so many people that have been left out and will be left out again if the Republicans' plan goes through. I've got good health insurance, but I've got a job offer in Canada, and one of the reasons I'm really interested in moving there is for the single-payer, the Canadian healthcare system up there, because when I retire, I won't have to worry about paying extreme costs, maintain healthcare coverage after that time period. And this isn't a new thing either. President Nixon actually tried to have national healthcare coverage at that time. So, and the Affordable Care Act, that was essentially a policy that the Republicans had supported before Obama came out supporting it. So that certainly isn't a real progressive or expensive change to our healthcare system, the Affordable Care Act. It's something that Republicans have rallied against, but it was something they had initially supported. So,
yeah, what was the turnaround, Professor Miller?
What was the
why did Republicans support the concept of the Affordable Care Act when it was under Republican administrations?
Oh well, it's the plan that was put in by Romney in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And so that is the plan that he put in, and a lot of elements of it, such as the mandate that everybody have insurance, just as Jim said, was supported by the Heritage Foundation, and which is a very conservative group. That's where that originally came from. And so those concepts of this kind of managed competition was put into effect and did pretty well in Massachusetts. And a number of the people, staff people who had worked on the one in Massachusetts actually worked on the Affordable Care Act. So there are some differences, but the whole idea that it's all based upon private insurance. A lot of people say, well, I have an Obamacare policy. Well, there's no such thing. All these are private policies, and they compete on the various marketplaces. And that's exactly what they had in Massachusetts. And they competed on their what they call the connectors. And And so this was essentially that policy. And that put, when Romney ran for a president, that put him into a really strange place because he had implemented that same policy, and it was his signature policy in Massachusetts. And now he's coming out, because it was Obama's policy, he had to come out against it in the election. And so it put him into a very difficult position. And his basic response was, well, he didn't deny that it wasn't good for Massachusetts, but what he said was, well, it wouldn't affect, he could not do it for the whole country because there's so many differences among the states and the like. Mm-hmm. That was his response. But it became very, very difficult because, as Jim said, this is a Republican policy.
So, Professor Miller, do you think that Democrats should campaign on single-payer health care in 2018 and 2020? Is this a winning issue for Democrats?
Well, that's an interesting question, and this has been not only this, but more generally has been a debate within the Democratic Party. And that is the Democrats were saying if they go to moderate policies, you know, not only in this area but other areas, that they have not done very well, and they need to take distinction. In other words, they don't want to just be, to use the term in the gold order era, just simply an echo of the Republican Party. That they want to, you know, be a distinction, and they have to go with a progressive agenda. And this would be part of the progressive agenda. Other people disagree and say, well, the bulk of the electorate remains in the moderate category. And even though more people have moved right and left, that's true in terms of public opinion, but the fact is there's still a lot in the middle. And so if you move to extreme, you know, more progressive for Democrats or even more conservative for Republicans, you wind up losing the election. I mean, that's the old idea that, you know, that they looked at Goldwater being too extreme on the right and having lost the election. And this was true with McGovern on the left. And so if you use that model, then, you know, you would go with something less than a full, for example, single-payer plan. You would go push the public option or something like that. And so that's a debate within the Democratic Party. And so since they haven't done well, obviously, in recent elections, the argument is that they need a distinct policy. And Elizabeth Warren and some other people in the Democratic Party are pushing for this, that the Democratic Party has got to show what they stand for. And this is one area, and there's a number of areas as well.
Daryl in Couderay is with us. Hi, Daryl.
Good morning. Yes, I would agree with Elizabeth Warren that a single payer is a possibility, and I think it's I would vote for it if I had the opportunity. And the reason for that is because all of our elected representatives and senators experience from election to death, themselves and their families have basically single payer, and if it works for them, you know, it could work for us, is what I believe, and it should work for us because, you know, we the people are the government.
Thanks, Daryl. Let me go right away to Douglas in Lansing, Iowa, who's got a somewhat similar comment before we get to Professor Miller to respond. Hi, Douglas.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. The big maddening thing about, you were talking about 33%, the maddening thing is the single payer. Those two words scare the heck out of people, and it's really not a single-payer system in the federal government. I've been on it for, I'm retired, maybe 50 years, and what it is the government does pay the bills, but we each year we can bid for many different insurance companies. We can choose some that are better and worse because some offer different things. We just have a list of private insurance companies that we bid for. We choose it each year, and basically we can't be refused, and basically most of them are good worldwide. I have Blue Cross Blue Shield, federal, and I'm in Iowa. I can go anywhere I want to get treatment in the United States and overseas. And it's the single-payer issue that scares the heck out of people. When I explain to people what it is, what the federal government has, they think it's wonderful.
Yeah, so I guess to split some hairs, Professor Miller, does the federal government have a single-payer plan for government employees?
No, it doesn't.
Right.
The the federal government does. What the federal government is it would be just like a private, you know, a firm that offers several policies. And so they provide some money, you know, to pay for the insurance, like, you know, your private firm would be, and there are and then people have to pay premiums. There are choices that people have, and if they pick a choice that is a more expensive choice, they have to pay more in premiums. But all this is run through private insurance companies. It's not a single payer plan. Medicare is. Even though, as I say, it's administered through insurance companies, but it's essentially it's government money. It's the Medicare system money, and so that is, and that's why exactly what was said is that people were concerned about the word single payer, and that's why like Bernie Sanders and some others are using the term Medicare for all.
Well, let me jump in, Professor Miller, because Sam in Delavan has been waiting with a similar comment. Hi, Sam.
Hello. Yes, I'm glad that the previous caller made his comments and that we're discussing this. To me, it's very frustrating, and it's actually I just don't know why it continues to happen. Why these discussions are always referred? Why Elizabeth Warren would even refer it to as a single payer system? That is a scary thing, because the single payer is going to be the government, and the government is not, it's a built-in negative to the name of it. It should be called birth to death, Medicare for all. Everybody knows what that is, even though it may ultimately not be quite exactly the same thing as Medicare the way we know it. But you have to look a long time to find children of senior citizens and senior citizens who don't love Medicare.
So we should call it Medicare for All or Lifelong Medicare for
right.
All. And Professor Miller, then more people would support that?
That's true. And because people do like Medicare, they talk about the so-called third rail of politics, and it's often referred to as Social Security, that if you touch it, you die. And Social Security is certainly a key to that. But Medicare is as well. And so this idea of doing away with Medicare, as Ryan, for example, he wants to do away with the current Medicare system and wants to go to private companies where there's a subsidy from the federal government instead of the current Medicare system. Well, that's a non-starter. People are not going to accept that, and people do like Medicare. And so the idea of Medicare for all is one. Interestingly enough, we were talking about government, federal government, which doesn't have a single payer for its own employees. But the fact is that Governor Walker, who's a conservative Republican, has pushed a single payer for state employees. That's exactly what he pushed. It was to substitute from the current insurance companies a single payer system for all state and a lot of local employees that are in that system. And the Joint Finance Committee has just denied this. But he was pushing for a single-payer plan for state employees and local employees that are part of that system in the state of Wisconsin, and which is interesting because here's a conservative Republican pushing a single-payer plan.
Yeah.
And now going back to the Medicare for All, there's also the proposals beginning with Clinton. Was that people could buy into Medicare at earlier ages. And so, for example, they were talking about like 55. So Medicare is 65, except for disabled people who can go in earlier, but 65, you move it down to 55. And here we have some incremental change. You have moved it down to 55, and you can buy in the system, and the idea that it would be actuarially sound and the like, but it would be in the same system.
I need to jump in because we have news again from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about single-payer health care. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us on this 4th of July. As Senate Republicans work on a plan to pass their version of a health care bill, U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren is calling on Democrats to look ahead and campaign on a national single-payer health care plan in the 2018 and 2020 elections. We are talking with our guest political science professor about what that type of plan is and welcoming your thoughts and questions. Would you support a Medicare for all or a single payer health care plan? Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And before we end this hour, we'll also get Professor Ed Miller, a political science professor at UW-Stevens Point, to weigh in on the current efforts to address health care and the politics of it all. We now have President Trump tweeting, if Republican senators are unable to pass what they are working on now, they should repeal immediately and then replace at a later date. So we'll see if maybe that's in the works for our health care system. Professor Miller, let me start with Camille on Facebook, who says the U.S. should absolutely not have a single-payer health care plan. Competition drives down price and increases efficiencies. Single-payer would be a nightmare. So what about those cons, according to Camille?
No. Personally, efficiency is not true. The fact is that Canada... the cost of the Canadian health care system, the administrative cost of the Canadian health care system, is about 2 to 3%. Medicare is about 3%. The cost of Medicare, for example, while private insurance, the cost of private insurance, the administrative cost, is about 20%. And so, you know, that indicates the efficiency aspects of it quite clearly. It's certainly not more efficient. The other problem with our, in terms of efficiency, is that we have segmented the market. In our current healthcare system, economics are difficult because the market is segmented. The largest portion of the market, I mean, you have Medicare for, you know, one group, and then you have the group health insurance, which takes actually the largest portion of the market. So with the Affordable Care Act, in terms of directly providing policies, you're really talking about, you know, less than, you know, 30% of the market affected by that. And in that, you also have Medicaid, you know. So what we have here in the United States is, you know, you take a lot of the people who could essentially would help in pay for it, and you're taking them out of the market. You're only looking at the individual market. And so we don't have a very efficient system in the United States. And the other thing is we don't actually have competition. Neither the healthcare system or even insurance system compete on the basis of price. And so it's not like buying shoes, you know, buying running shoes, for example. There's competition. And you go in, you research them, you know, you look up Runner's World and see which is the best shoes. You look at the price and you make your choice. You don't do that in the healthcare system, nor do you do it necessarily in the health insurance system. Now, there are some employers that have banded together in what's called buyer's market. And they've tried to reinvigorate the market by saying to these insurance companies, as well as the healthcare system, you know, you compete. And so there is some of that around the country. But generally, it has not worked very well in terms of trying to create a true market, as you would in many other items.
Let's go to James in Menominee, Michigan next. Hi, James.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, go ahead.
So I hear from a lot of conservatives quoting, you know, people abusing the emergency room, say, you know, I'll go to the ER for a hangnail. And I actually see this. I have friends who are on Badger Care. It's 100% paid. What do they care? That drives up costs. A suggestion to make the conservative party maybe more agreeable to a single-payer service, what if we keep some co-pays around? Put like a small penalty on ER use versus waiting for urgent care in the morning. You know, something that's not going to bankrupt somebody, but a cost that's negligible, but still would leave the emergency room accessible and affordable to, if you really needed it. Say if you were injured or were wounded, had a broken arm, something you actually need the emergency room for, like $100 or something.
Yeah, well, I don't want to debate whether James... So James says that people on Badger Care go to the ER for, you know, very minor ailments.
Right.
And so what about his suggestion?
Right, yeah, okay, and we do that. You know, in private insurance, for example, typically there is a higher copay or flat payment if you use the emergency room, and often it's if you're not admitted to the hospital. So if you go to the emergency room and you're not admitted to the hospital, in addition to any copay, there may be like a $75 or $100 charge. And that's to discourage people to use the emergency room. For people on Badger Care, which is Medicaid, the problem is that to charge them a lot of money, you can't really do that only because they don't have a lot of money, because that's the reason they're on Badger Care. And so that is a problem. Although increasingly we find around the country that there is a charge for the use of the emergency room in this way, and there's an attempt to get people out of the emergency room. One of the problems is that we're finding is with regard to Badger Care or Medicaid is that the primary care doctor, which they would normally go to, doesn't exist in their neighborhood, so they don't have a primary care doctor. And so the emergency room becomes their point of contact with the medical care system, and it is a bad place to receive health care, in the emergency room. The emergency room is exactly what the name is. It's for, you know, heart attacks and strokes. So if you come in with a fever or something like this, that's not where to get health care. And often there's a long wait and the like. And so we're trying to establish various other kinds of facilities, urgent care, other kinds of physician groups that would service these individuals. And this has been an attempt. It doesn't have much to do with the health insurance. It has to do often with the lack of physician access that they have in their communities. Yeah.
Briefly, because we're running short on time, in Canada, if somebody has a hangnail and they go to the emergency room, they'll get treatment for that?
Probably. Yeah. They would probably get treatment, just like in the United States. There would probably be treatment. There could be a copayment in some of the provinces, because the provinces are different. But we are not finding this to be as much of a problem because of the Canadian healthcare system. People have access to doctors.
Yeah.
You know, they can go in. The doctor doesn't refuse them. In the United States, the doctors refuse individuals. People call up the doctor's office and say, you know, I'm pregnant, you know, and I need, you know, prenatal care. And they'll say, well, what insurance do you have? And they'll say, I have Badger Care. And they'll say, well, we don't take Badger Care. Yes. And that's a lot of them. So they cannot get treatment. They cannot get treatment from private physicians. In Canada, that doesn't happen, because everybody has them, coming back to the single-payer system. So it doesn't matter, you know, person A, or, you know, who was very rich, and person B, who was poor, they're essentially paying the same, because the Canadian healthcare system in that province, and it does vary by province how much they pay the same amount. And so there's nothing where they say, I'm sorry, we can't take you. In the United States, we have this all over. In Wisconsin, it's especially acute with regard to dental care, because we pay one of the lowest in the country, you know, reimbursement for dental care under Badger Care. And so lots and lots of dentists in Wisconsin do not take Badger Care, and they won't see these individuals. And so they've had to set up special clinics to try to treat these people. So there's some special clinics to do this. Many of them can't get care under Badger Care, and that's because of the pay is so low.
Terry in Green Bay is with us. Hi, Terry.
Good morning. Great topic here. I just want to throw my support behind a Badger Care for All proposal that was introduced by Representative Eric Genrich in my hometown here in Green Bay. There's going to be an introduction of the legislation, the actual legislation, put out tomorrow at the Capitol Hill for, you know, making Badger Care Plus a public option for all, which would be, I think, a great thing, because it'll cut the administrative costs down by like 30%. It's funded through additional premiums, not additional taxes. So it's funded through premiums. And it'll really compete with other private insurance being offered on the marketplace for small businesses and especially individuals. I think it's a great option that should be get a lot of support. That's being introduced tomorrow at Capitol Hill.
You mean at the state Capitol, not Capitol Hill in Washington, Terry?
Correct, yeah.
All right, the state Capitol. Are you aware of this, Professor Miller?
Right, yeah. And there's two states. Vermont has tried it briefly, and they found that they can't support it, you know, a single payer in Vermont. So that didn't go very far. And right now there's a major proposal in California to adopt a single-payer plan for California. And since California is so big, they may be able to swing it in California if it was ever adopted. I think it's politically it will be difficult to get that adopted. In Wisconsin, for Badger Care for All, I think one of the issues in opposition to that would be primarily the idea of reimbursement, of how much, as I mentioned with dental care, but how much Badger Care will pay individual physicians. And so I can see the medical establishment opposing that.
Yeah, so President Trump is now tweeting, hey, if the GOP can't pass a replacement for the Affordable Care Act right away, and they're certainly having problems, then repeal it and replace at a later date. What would that mean?
Well, that would be a disaster. Because no matter, you know, whether they come up with a replacement or not, by simply doing that, you're going to create chaos in the insurance market. And so why would insurance companies even participate in these exchanges? So during the time period, you know, they're talking about repealing it, not necessarily on the dime, but repealing it within a year. You know, the idea we're going to repeal it and we're going to have a year to come up with a replacement for it. The fact is that, you know, even though the Affordable Care Act would be operating during that particular year, insurance companies are not going to want to participate. One of the reasons insurance companies are pulling out of these markets right now is because the fact is that they don't know what's going to happen. There is some subsidy that insurance companies get for their poorer patients, subscribers, as well as, you know, for their co-payments. And, you know, Trump keeps saying that he's going to cut that off. Mm-hmm. And so insurers are saying, well, we don't know what's going to happen, you know, for next year. And so we're not going to participate in the exchanges. And that's one of the reasons that they pulled out of these exchanges.
Professor Miller, we have less than 45 seconds. Do you think that Congress will come to some sort of agreement on replacing Obamacare?
I don't think so. I think unless they put pressure on them, there's so much differences in the Senate, and the Senate bill is a bit different than the House bill. They started with the House bill. I think the difference between the more centrist ones and more conservative Republicans, they're not going to come to a conclusion, I doubt. And one of the big issues is Medicaid, and that's cutting back on Medicaid in a number of states. This would be a disaster for lots of states if they significantly cut back on Medicaid.
I'm sure we will talk again. Thanks very much for being with us, Professor Ed Miller. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.